This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Talking a lot about, obviously, Game 3 that took place last night. And really, anybody who's worth his salt trying to talk about what's going to happen next, the answer is we just don't know. Because we don't know what's going to happen with Klay Thompson's injury situation. We don't know what's going to happen with Kevin Durant's injury situation either. That is the storyline as we prepare for Game 4. But there's a much bigger story going on across the world today, and that is the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And people who listen to the show regularly, you guys know that I'm a big history buff. And I had the incredible good fortune 2 years ago to spend the day touring the beaches of Normandy with a private tour guide, as you can do if you go over there. You can just Google and get your own tour guide. Or you can go in a group, as I imagine is also very very amazing and entertaining. But we had a tour guide driving us around in a van. I took my family, my kids, three boys who were young, my wife. Our whole crew was out, spent the day going to all these different sites. And it was a amazing way to spend a day. So empowering, I would say, to be able to walk that area of Normandy, which looks very often almost identical to what it looked like 75 years ago. Many of the German guns and pillboxes that were built are still there, and you can walk up and touch the cannons. And when you stand on those bluffs and look down at that beach and think about the incredible bravery it took for those soldiers, many of whom were kids, 18 and 19 years old, to step out into a hail of German gunfire, to charge up hillsides and cliffs manned by Nazi soldiers hell-bent on killing them, it will make you realize that anyone who ever says a bad word about American history has never actually studied American history. And it will fire you up in a big way. The idea that anyone would argue that America is not and has not always been the greatest voice for freedom and justice in the history of human civilization. You stand on those cliffs and you look out at that ocean and you just think about what it took for those soldiers, many of whom had never been out of their home state before this war began, almost all of whom volunteered in the wake of Pearl Harbor. The 101st Airborne, they trained to become paratroopers. These guys were such unbelievable bravery that many of them had never been in an airplane before they started training to be paratroopers. Think about that for a minute. These guys were so hell-bent on beating the Nazis that many of them had never been in an airplane before. The first time they went up in an airplane was when they were training to jump out of it as a paratrooper. Think about the sheer enormous brass balls you have to have as a kid from some farm to get into an airplane, rise up into the air for the first time, and the first time you are in the air, you jump out with a parachute. I mean, it is overwhelming to even think about. We just saw, this is an amazing story, I tweeted it out, 75 years after he jumped out of a plane going into Normandy, a 97-year-old World War II veteran redid his jump in Normandy. Think about that. If you read any books at all about World War II, which I would encourage you to do, as those paratroopers are jumping out of that plane, they're seeing the guys in front of them just get wiped out. And they know that they still have the obligation and the responsibility to be the next person to jump out of that airplane. And they did it. And if you read anything about World War II or watch any of the grainy footage or any of the movies that have attempted to replicate it, those guys came in on the troop transports, and many of them were in such deep water that they weren't only stepping off into a hail of gunfire and watching everybody get shot up all around them, but they almost drowned, and some did drown when they stepped into the water because it was over their head and their equipment weighed so much that they couldn't even get above the water, and yet they still all did it. I want you to just think about that this morning as you are going into work. Think about the bravery of these 18 and 19-year-old kids, all volunteers from all over the United States, also Canada, Australia. Hundreds of thousands of those kids stepped off into hail fire from Nazi assassins who were hell-bent on killing them and creating a fundamentally evil empire that would rule the world. And I also want you to think, if you are a young person and you don't know anything about history, because that is what is all too often happening in this country, think about the fact that your grandfathers and your great-grandfathers and your great-great-grandfathers fought actual Nazis and risked their lives to create freedom so that you can sit on social media and call people who have different political opinions than you Nazis. And think about what a little rotten, sniveling bastard you are when you make that decision. Your grandfathers and your great-grandfathers created a world where freedom of expression and freedom of thought exists so that you can sit around on your Twitter feed and on your Instagram feed and on your Facebook feed and call people you disagree with Nazis from the comfort of your air-conditioned recliner while you kick back in your underwear. And I want all of you to think about this, because I think this is a big question that confronts this country now. Do we have the balls to do something like that today? Because I think if you stand on that cliff and you look out at that ocean and you contemplate what those guys did 75 years ago, it's really easy to make accusations and to lob insults and to fight for gender-neutral bathrooms today. But I want you to think about what bravery really is and what is required to march into the face of evil, into a stream of bullets with Nazis trying to ruin not only your life and end it forever, but end all of Western civilization as we knew it. Those men and women from all over the world, but primarily from America, stepped up and met that challenge head on. I believe we still have the ability to do that as a country, but I think we have turned into a nation of pussy willows. But for everybody out there who wants to sell you on the idea that America is not a great and special place and that our history is not bedecked with honor, I challenge all of you, at a minimum, to get on my Twitter feed and look at those cliffs and think about what those kids did. And I challenge you also, at some point in time, make that journey over to Normandy. Spend a day trying to really understand what happened on June 6, 1944, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, days in the history of America and in the history of the world. And think about what your ancestors and your forebears were capable of in this country. And I want you to remember that the next time you see somebody saying that America's not special, or that America isn't an incredible place, or that America isn't a light on a shining hill, and that we aren't the best thing to ever exist in the history of the world. Without us, and without this country doing what it did, there might still be a Nazi empire in this country. And what's amazing about that is it was almost all a volunteer army filled with a bunch of kids who had barely ever gone anywhere and barely ever seen anything. And they marched right into the maw, into a whirlwind, into an incredible hail of bullets. And they climbed those cliffs and they kicked those Nazis' ass. And as a result, we get to sit around and talk about sports as much as we want. And we get to watch as many movies and hang out and argue about a lot of things that really, in the grand scheme of things, don't matter at all because of what those guys did.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We got a lot of reaction pouring in on social media. Again, I'd encourage you guys, if you're somewhat curious about D-Day, you can just watch a couple of minute videos that I posted from the tour experience that I had on the beaches of Normandy. A lot of people want to weigh in on the phone, 877-996-6369. We'll go to those calls. Let's dive in. Who should we go to first, Dub?
We got Rob in Ohio up first.
Rob, what's up, my man?
Hey, Clay, first-time caller, huge fan. My dad did not was not in the battle, but he was a graduate of West Point, class of 44. A little bit of trivia. It was one of the few classes that went through in 3 years because of the invasion.
Oh, wow.
And on... On 6-6-44, they announced the invasion of Normandy during the graduation.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
And many of his classmates or in the class of 43 died because they were the first off the boats.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. If you have, thanks for the call. If you have the opportunity to visit West Point, that is also a pretty awe-inspiring moment. I had an opportunity to get to write a story about a West Point cadet, Caleb Campbell, who was trying to play in the NFL, and I spent the day with him on the campus there at West Point, ate in the mess hall, spent a lot of time walking all around that area, and it's pretty remarkable to be able to see what soldiers today, what the cadets today, both I'd like to go to Annapolis sometime. I haven't been to Annapolis, but I have been to West Point. And that was a pretty extraordinary opportunity and accomplishment to see what those guys go through as well. Let's keep the phones rolling. Who's up next?
We have Steve in Spokane.
Steve in Spokane. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Clay, can you hear me? The other guy, I couldn't hear at all.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, I'm a retired Army infantry officer. But even though I was born in 1950, I'm a veteran of World War II. Kind of strange because one of my places that I served for 3 years was Berlin, and when I served there, Berlin was classified as an occupied city from World War II, so we wore the Army of Occupation Medal. I was at Normandy in 1996, spent 3 days there, went to the cemetery. To me, the most impressive place is the Point du Hoc.
Yes.
I met General Grange, who actually was there at Point du Hoc. 225 started, 95 survived to fight 3 days later. And I walked everywhere. I was at St. Mary and Glace. I met a guy who was at Omaha Beach. So I met quite a few veterans that... were there when I was going to military school, were World War II vets. So I had a chance to see a lot of that stuff.
Well, I appreciate the call. Appreciate the service. I would say this. I think there are a lot of people out there listening to us right now that either have family members who served in World War II or have been fortunate enough to interact with people who did serve in World War II, and there's a dwindling number of those soldiers still alive today. And I think, 100 years from now, what they did may well be more impressive than even it seems to us today. I had lots of people in my family, as anybody did, who had family in America at the time that served in the military. And I specifically remember as a really young kid, my great uncle, my grandmother's brother, was in Patton's army. And he had been overseas in the Tennessee kid, you know, who had never really been anywhere, and then he is in the middle of World War II. And he said, and I remember him telling me this story when I was a little kid, that if you've ever seen the movie Patton, I mean, it's a phenomenal movie to watch, first of all, if you haven't seen it. I think it's George C. Scott who plays Patton. Add it to your list. It's probably, what, a 50-year-old movie at this point, 45-year-old movie. And he said he was a kid, and all of a sudden the general comes running, driving up in a Jeep, and the soldiers are all arrayed, and Patton gets out to look at him. And he's walking down the line of soldiers, and Patton stops in front of my great uncle and, you know, asks him where he's from and how old he is. And then he says, have you killed any Germans yet, kid? And he said, no. You know, he's a young soldier who just gotten overseas and joined the army. And Patton said, well, you'll get your chance. You'll get your chance, which is a pretty amazing story to think about. You know, we talk a lot about the individual soldiers, but the heroism involved in the planning of D-Day. I've been over to London a couple of times. If you ever get to go to London, one of the most remarkable things you can do in London, and look, there are a lot of remarkable aspects of London history. You can tour the Churchill War Rooms, which are left almost identical to how they were in the battle in Europe, where they managed everything from the bunkers underground because they were afraid of getting hit by a bomb. So Churchill himself would sleep there on a cot. They have the maps on the wall of the different advancing troops and armies, and it is like walking into a literal museum. I mean, it's a time capsule, and it's one of the coolest things I've ever done. I would encourage you, if you're driving along right now and you know that at some point you may be in London, the Churchill War Museums, if you are a history buff, particularly a military history buff, should be the number one overall destination for you in all of London. It's truly that incredible to be able to see. All right, Dub, who we got up next?
We got Jesse in Omaha.
Jesse, what's shaking, my man?
I just want to weigh in on what you were saying. I appreciate the words and everything. And you were saying how you wonder whether or not today's generation could do that. And I'm an active duty Air Force. I'm a deployment manager. I'm the guy who hands out trips to Afghanistan and Africa and the Middle East. And I got to tell you, when we have deployments drop, I don't have to go looking for people. My phone's ringing off the hook. People are knocking at my door. These kids want to go. I know the millennials get
that's phenomenal. And I don't want to cut you off, but I want to say this. That's phenomenal, and I love to hear that. The big difference, I would say, is those guys are a small segment of the overall population. We had to mobilize the entire American population in order to win World War
II, totally
right?
Agree. That's where I was going. They're a small subset. Today's millennials catch a lot of flack, but there are good ones, and there are a lot of good ones, and they're out there today, and they're ready to go.
There's no doubt. I appreciate that call. I'm glad you said that. I mean, look, there are a ton of people listening in all 50 states, and frankly, all over the world. We have a lot of people who listen to us overseas, serving in Germany, serving in Afghanistan, serving in the Middle East, wherever you may be, because you want that connection with home, and you stream Fox Sports Radio or listen to the podcast. I know a lot of you guys do that. We appreciate all the service that you guys are doing. Difference being, like, again, the just sheer scale of what had to happen in order to win World War II. I'm not sure we'll ever see anything like it again. The concept of drafting and bringing in as many people as we did from all walks of life in order to have to beat the Germans, to beat the Nazis, is a scale and magnitude that I'm not sure, frankly, we'll ever see a war that magnitude of again. Hopefully we won't. Hopefully for the rest of human history, there will never be a war like this. As Einstein, I think, said, I don't know what World War III will look like in terms of the weapons that we will have, but the next war will be fought with sticks and stones, which is a sign of how rapidly the technology has evolved. And maybe it's such a case that we don't need massive numbers of soldiers anymore because the technology is so all-encompassing and all powerful that we won't see any major ground offensives like we saw in World War II. But still, again, I encourage you guys to do your research and read and understand what we are capable of when we are all moving in the same direction. Who's up next?
We got a couple more here. We got Paul in Pennsylvania.
Paul in Pennsylvania, what you got for me?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Fire away.
Just another layer to the heroism that you're talking about, with them running into that hail of bullets. people don't wrap their head around the fact that there was absolutely no retreat.
Yeah.
There was nowhere to hide.
Really
there was
well
nowhere
said.
To go.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, they couldn't take those troops back off that beach. You either took the hills or you died, right? Because the idea that with the mass of material and men and everything else, the idea that you were going to be able to bring somebody out, the Germans were rushing to defend the coastline. They would have been bombarding any ships that were trying to retreat. So effectively, it was advance or die in order to take those beaches in Normandy. Last call before we roll out this hour. Who's up?
Eric in Kentucky.
Eric, what you got for me?
Hey, Clay, how you doing?
Excellent.
What you was talking about, the kids, you know, and from the small towns, that's like my uncle. We're from a little small community called Bee Spring, Kentucky. He was in the 101st Airborne at the invasion of Normandy and lost his life. And the 101st Airborne, I've done my research, the 101st, because I'm very patriotic. I'm proud of it. The 101st Airborne was created for the invasion of Normandy.
It's an incredible story and band. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the sacrifice of your uncle. It's an incredible story and band of brothers. The Stephen Ambrose book, I believe, I would encourage everybody to read. It's an incredible story that he wrote about these guys, and I think they made the HBO miniseries about it. If you're not a reader and you don't want to read the book, obviously that miniseries has been incredibly popular in bringing to light what these men accomplished. You mentioned the fact that he gave his life. Walking around the Normandy cemetery is also a chilling and awe-inspiring experience. 10,000 or more identical headstones of the land there in North France. It's considered American soil. We own that cemetery for all of the people that are buried there. The amount that they gave was the full measure, and the impact that they continue to have. There are American flags that still fly to this day all over Normandy for what we did to liberate the continent of Europe and France in particular.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
It's a Confidence Show. We're joined now by Frank Isola at The Frank Isola, Around the Horn, Sirius XM, The Athletic. You can find him any and everywhere across the entirety of the sports landscape. And Frank, last night, I mean, that was pretty much a consistent beatdown that was delivered by the Toronto Raptors from the opening tip. I never really felt like the Warriors had a chance to win this game. They kept it close thanks to Steph's heroics. But what's going to happen here? I mean, is it as simple as if Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant don't come back, this series is over? And basically, we just all sit around and wait and see whether or not those guys can return?
Yeah, I mean, it was a terrific win for Toronto and what was not really a good game at all. I mean, Golden State just was terrible on the defensive end, and the game was never really close. I think they got as close as 7 in the second half, and I agree with you. I never really felt as if Toronto was being threatened. I mean, Steph Curry scored 47 points. It's almost like they needed him to score 70. But again, the issue was on the defensive end, and they have no chance if Klay Thompson can't come back. If Klay Thompson were to come back without Durant, they have a chance. But without both of them, especially defensively, and now that they've lost home court advantage, so you know that they're going to have to win, you know, 2 more home games and going to have to win at least 1 more game on the road. Right now, Golden State is in a lot of trouble. They picked the wrong time of year for all their, you know, a lot of their key guys to get hurt.
So you're in New York, and there obviously has been a lot of optimism about the possibility of Kevin Durant coming to join the Knicks. I actually think that the way this series has played out, regardless of how it ends, Kevin Durant can come back and lead the Warriors to championship victory, and then he can basically kind of stick a middle finger up to all of his critics and say, yeah, without me, there's no way the Warriors win this championship, so you really can't come after me and say I haven't been an integral part of the championships that we've won so far. Or if he's not able to come back healthy, he can say, but for my injury, we probably go on and win the championship. And what I'm getting at here is the motivation, I think, of, oh, you have to go somewhere else to prove that you're capable of winning a championship and you can be the driving force on a championship caliber team. I don't think necessarily is there the same way. Is there nervousness in New York over how all of this is playing out?
Yeah, there definitely is. And I was up in Toronto for games 1 and 2 and being around the Warrior people, and they're a little bit more optimistic now than they were maybe a couple of months ago about Kevin Durant staying. Now, of course, they're going to always find a reason to be optimistic. But I find it weird, Clay. If you watch that last night, they showed that clip of Steph Curry walking on the court, and you know he's getting like a pep talk from Kevin Durant. Like, how phony would it look that if in 3 weeks from now he ends up leaving, or you know, a little more than 3 weeks from now, he ends up leaving to go sign with another team? The whole thing, it just looks weird. Like, he's standing outside the locker room after game two, embracing all his teammates as they come off the court. So you can be all in right at this moment, but yet on July 1st you're going to be out that quickly? I've never understood why he would want to leave. I understand people say, well, it looks like he joined a great team. That's absolutely what he did. But, you know, we look at these teams that Magic and Kareem, the great Celtic teams, they've always had great players. I still don't think 20 years from now people are going to make a big deal about the fact that Kevin Durant played with other great players. All these teams that win, they all play with great players. And when you talk about legacy, there's a better chance that his legacy will be ruined if he came to New York, because that's kind of been the history of the last 20 years. So if it's going to be the Knicks, and you know, God bless them if they can get him, that's a big time risk that Kevin Durant would be taking.
Not only that, he can look just down the coast in L.A. and see what can happen when you join a primetime franchise in a big city, and things start to fall apart pretty fast.
And that roster is better, Clay, the one that LeBron joined.
And that's particularly the case where it looks now, and speaking of New York, it looks like Kyrie Irving is going to Brooklyn. Are you picking up on those vibes as well? Do you buy into that kind of rumor that seems to be crystallizing?
Yeah, that's been going on for a while. Kyrie only lives two towns away from me. I ran into somebody yesterday. He told me that they saw him outside his house, and they said to him, "You're coming to the Knicks, right?" And Kyrie said to them, "What about Brooklyn?" So Kyrie actually used the word Brooklyn. I will say this. Danny Ainge wants to keep Kyrie Irving. Now, people are going to say, well, sure, he's got to say that. No, Danny Ainge is all about having assets, and he doesn't want to just lose Kyrie Irving. I'm still not going to count the Boston Celtics out just yet, because we don't know what's going to happen with Anthony Davis, and it looks like Anthony Davis will be traded. So if Anthony Davis were to get traded to Boston, I think there's a pretty good chance that Kyrie Irving would stay. We know there are issues with Kyrie Irving and some of his teammates, but some of those teammates would likely be traded in a deal for Anthony Davis. So things would change pretty dramatically for the Boston Celtics if they were able to acquire Anthony Davis.
What in the world happens if the Knicks can't get Kevin Durant, if Kyrie Irving goes to Brooklyn? Let's say Kawhi stays in Toronto, as the odds now reflect that he might. And then the Knicks are sitting there having traded away Porzingis. Maybe they could make a move and try to get Anthony Davis, but does Anthony Davis really want to be on the Knicks? They're much worse of a team than he would have if he just stayed in New Orleans. Like, the Knicks are going to be an unmitigated disaster if what happens looks like it might be happening.
Well, two things. Number one, they'll either try to spin us. Well, we're rebuilding. Remember, we told you that. So we're trying to build with young players, which, of course, would be nonsense because, like you pointed out, if they kept Porzingis, you'd have Porzingis now and the third overall pick of the draft coming in. Or they could try to go after guys like Kemba Walker, Jimmy Butler, or how about this one? You want to talk about the guy that would make kind of like the perfect Knick? What about DeMarcus Cousins? Would the Knicks be crazy enough to do something like that? You saw the way that DeMarcus Cousins,
he couldn't move last night.
He can, and that's going to be a big issue. I mean, I feel badly for him because he would have gotten a huge deal in Sacramento, got traded. He was sitting on a big contract in New Orleans and then left. And remember, the New Orleans still offered him, I thought it was like 2 years, $40 million, which he turned down. You know, in today's NBA, with the way that a center is used, and that guy, you know, he struggles defensively, and now he's got all these injuries. Is somebody paying DeMarcus Cousins $100 million? Are you really going to invest that kind of money in a guy like that who, you know, physically, you know, is constantly having some type of issues? I don't know about that one.
He looked like an old guy who was playing at the Y who never got stretched out last night. I mean, you know
how couldn't dunk
that
the ball.
I mean, he
couldn't
jump.
How about the two times around the basket when it just tried to dunk the ball? He went up soft and got a shot block.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he was 1 for 7 from the floor, and that doesn't really do justice to the number of times that he had an opportunity to finish or make a decent pass, and most of the time he couldn't do it. A lot of his passes were soft and not crisp and not in control. It was just an ugly, ugly performance. So let's go back to the court to what we saw last night. If you are Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi right now probably the NBA Finals MVP if voting were taking place right now. I can't imagine, unless some people voted for Siakam, but I think this would be Kawhi's in a runaway through three games. If you are able to win a championship with Toronto, is there any way you leave the Raptors, or does that championship kind of LeBron cleanse you, much like happened with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and it actually spurs you to go ahead and make the decision to move even more likely because you've already got the championship racked up? What do you think Kawhi is thinking now as we come down the stretch part of this series?
Well, there's been talk up in Toronto that maybe he would sign a two-year deal. And if you look at the age of all the players, a lot of their key players, Kyle Lowry, if they brought back Marc Gasol, they got a couple of key players who, you know, you figure for two more years can really help you. And this team could, you know, rule the East for a couple of years. Plus, Siakam is emerging as an all-star caliber player. Fred VanVleet has been terrific ever since he had that terrible 1-for-11 game against Milwaukee. The great thing about Kawhi is, You never know. And I think the guy's probably a lot smarter than we all give him credit for. He's funny at the podium after these games. Like when Mark Schwartz from ESPN said to him, you know, when Iguodala made the shot, he said, you know, is that the player who's, you know, would you rather see the ball in his hands than anybody else's hands? And Kawhi's response was, no, I'd rather see the ball in our hands because that would mean we have the ball. Yeah. Like, he takes, like, everything literally. He's actually pretty funny up at the podium. Like, to me, you don't know what he's going to do, but he has to figure – you know, he's won a title there. He could sign for 2 years, make a ton of money, and rule the East. The Eastern Conference is still a little suspect compared to the Western Conference. And if Durant were to stay in Golden State and you go to the Clippers, well, then, you know, you are still competing against the Golden State Warriors. I would not be shocked. I guess that report came out of Toronto that he's purchased some, maybe probably like a condo or something like that up in Toronto. So who knows right now? I think if he stays there, I think it would be two years, and eventually he'll go on the move and end up in L.A. So I think they have a chance, especially now if it looks like they might win this thing.
You've covered the NBA for a long time. When you saw the story that the NBA was considering removing the team owner, term owner, because of racial insensitivity, your first thought was what?
I thought it was a headline in The Onion.
Yeah.
I really did. I couldn't believe it because, I mean, even if you, like, if you start calling everyone a chairman or a governor, or they're still the owner of the team, and they don't own the player. They own the player's contracts.
Yeah.
And they own everything about the team. And when the player, if you're in a contract with the team and you don't feel like playing for the team anymore, you could just quit and you're not going to get paid. And when you become a free agent, you have the freedom to do whatever you want. I think it's, you know, what they always say, political correctness run amok. I think it's, you cannot tell me that word is offensive, an owner. I mean, you own a car, you own a business, you own a house. These guys own it. They don't just own the roster. They own everything about the organization. So I couldn't. But I'm sure you probably thought it was a little insane.
Oh,
right?
I thought it was completely insane. But I was actually encouraged. You know, you never know what the response is going to be on social media or how much it reflects what the quote unquote real world opinion would be. But I put up a poll. Over 40,000 people voted in it. And 96% of people thought that it was, not remotely racially insensitive. So you get 96% of people with over 40,000 people voting to agree on anything in this day and age. It's almost impossible. So I was at least a little bit encouraged by that.
Let me ask you this, Clay. You don't think that Michael Jordan wears it as a source of pride?
Oh yeah,
that he is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. You don't think that means a lot to you? You don't think that Michael Jordan likes that title? To what he's accomplished and has been able to make enough money over his career that he can buy a professional sports team? And how many times, if you look at LeBron's bio, it says owner Blaze Pizza, minority owner of like Liverpool, and one day wants to own a professional basketball team. Isn't that like a great source of pride for him for how much money he's made over his career? They might be able to do something like that.
I think amen. And to me, the goal of anyone in America should be to become a part of an ownership society, right? Whether it's own your home, which is a goal of tons of people who are listening to us across the all 50 states right now, whether it is to own a business, which is another, it doesn't have to be a huge business, be a small business of doing a variety of different things. owning your own business is a huge point of pride. A lot of small business owners across America are the heartbeat of this nation. Being a part of the ownership society, and even if you don't own your home or own a business, a lot of people out there listening to us right now own a dog, or at least you own a lawnmower, or you own a car. You know, I mean, like, the idea that that would be an offensive term is frankly more of an insult to anybody who is dumb enough to not understand, to me, the distinction between ownership of a business and ownership of a contract versus ownership of an actual physical human being. I said this on the show. Look, you pay me $10 million a year, I'll call you whatever you want me to call you, right? I mean, I don't care. I don't care what title you want to, you know, supreme leader of all that is great in the world. Like, I will genuflect at your altar. I will kneel before the Iron Throne for $10 million a year. Trust me, I will do that in a heartbeat. Last question.
So what you're saying is I'm the chairman of my car. I'm not the owner of it. I'm the chairman of it.
Yeah.
The governor of my car.
Proprietor of your lawnmower. I think that today is D-Day, and I know that you are a student of history in many respects too. I got to tour D-Day a couple of years ago, and when I came back, I said, this is one of the most remarkable days of my life, and also that I believe what those kids did, and many of them were kids, 18, 19-year-old volunteers from all over America on D-Day, is going to continue to grow in legend in the decades ahead as real, you know, sort of ground combat like that hopefully becomes even more of a rarity. Because you stand there on some of those cliffs and look out from those German pillboxes and think about what those men did. And it is flat out unbelievable today. And I think 100 years from now, it'll seem even more extraordinary.
You know, when I remember watching the Band of Brothers on HBO, which I thought was outstanding, you know, kind of like start to finish, even when they were in basic training, and to think about what they went through. And that's really what it comes down to. I mean, think about how much you've accomplished already in your life and how much you have lived since you were 18 years old. No one really has lived yet when you're 18, 19, 20. And to see the sacrifice that they went through. And there's a great scene in Band of Brothers when I believe they're over in England before they're about to, you know, get on the planes and fly over. And it gets delayed because of weather. And, you know, they're handing out, like, life insurance policies to guys. Think about the courage that those guys had. A lot of those guys knew that they were never coming home, and they were all gung-ho about it to fight for the country. It really is remarkable. Whenever I see Saving Private Ryan, which I don't know how that didn't win Best Picture when it was out, but Band of Brothers, to me, really, it was so telling, just the courage that they had and how young they were. I mean, these were guys who, I mean, most people, you know, think about what you experience after the age of 18. These poor guys were going to their 18 and 19, sacrificing everything just to defend the country.
Yeah, wild story that really brings it home for me. Most of the guys in the 101st Airborne who were paratrooping in on D-Day in Normandy had never jumped out of an airplane before, had never been in an airplane before the first time they jumped out. I mean, just think about how wild that is. Frank Isola at the Frank Isola on Twitter. Think about that as we go to break. You've never been in an airplane before, and the first time you go up, you're jumping out with a parachute. Flat out unbelievable. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are indeed here in the Geico Outkick studios. Eddie Garcia, I wanted to ask you, how was the Disney World Star Wars universe?
Well, I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. I will not shy away from that. It was fantastic. It was, I'll give you a real quick anecdote. I saw a man walk in with his son. I would say the man was in his 40s. The kid was probably in his, I don't know, early teens, maybe now, probably like 11, 12. And they both pointed and they both said, "Look at that." And they had the same look on their face. So it was pretty awesome.
How was the ride where you got to fly the Millennium Falcon? Did you get to do that?
I did. It was okay. It was kind of like Star Tours where you had a little bit of control over what was going on, but it was very similar to that. But the rest of it, the park itself, just everything was awesome.
How crowded is it? You have to have special pass to get into the land right now,
yeah,
right?
Right now you have to have a reservation, so it honestly wasn't that crowded at all. They're letting people in every couple of hours, and you go for a block of 4 hours.
But for people out there who are, I think it's going to open at the end of August, if I'm not mistaken, in Disney World. But for people out there who are listening that are big Star Wars fans, and or their kids, you would give it a very high thumbs up.
I would give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
That's pretty phenomenal. All right, there we go, Chewy. We appreciate that in the background. By the way, what do you expect tonight in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals? That's tonight, right?
Yes, it is. Zdeno Chara, the captain for the Bruins, suffered a broken jaw. At least that's the report in Game number 4. We're going to see if he's going to play or not, believe it or not.
I bet he gets wired up. Yeah, it's crazy.
I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, the teams have alternated wins each time so far. I like Boston to take the 3-2 series lead.
And do you think whoever wins Game 5 then will go on and win this series?
I do.
Yeah, it will be intriguing to see for sure.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.